I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? It's Metal Shop and Metal Shop's Backstage Pass podcast. Right now, I'm talking with Chase Mason from Gate Creeper, released an unexpected reality dropped on Closed Casket Activities out of nowhere. Appropriate title, appropriate for the times that we're living in, and then, of course, for just surprise dropping a record. First off, Chase, it's been a while. How are you doing? How's the last 10, 11 months off from touring? Strange reality we're living in. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Past year or so, almost, or I guess we're coming up on a year now.
Yeah.
Been pretty boring, but been trying to stay busy. So I'm doing all right. Could be worse.
If you follow Chase on social media, you see that he got a gold tooth during quarantine or during the pandemic. Tell me about the process. So you went down to, was it Mexico City or?
Yeah, Mexico City.
So was that the reason for the trip? Because I follow that guy. Thanks to you, I follow that guy on social media now. He does some really cool gold teeth.
Yeah. No, it wasn't the reason to go down there. I actually had a friend that I was meeting down there. But while I was preparing to go down there, and I was asking some friends of different things to do, and like I'm into tattoos and stuff, so mm-hmm. people were like recommending me tattoo artists, and someone recommended me that the place that ended up getting my gold tooth, and I was sort of familiar with it because they put gold teeth in a lot of like tattoo artists, and a lot of tattoo artists go down to Mexico City to, they'll stay there for a couple weeks and tattoo. So I was like, oh yeah, that is there. So I just messaged them and ended up getting it done while I was down there.
How was it down there? Were things a lot more open up? Was it less restrictions or about the same?
I'd say it's about the same.
Okay.
I mean, everything, everybody had masks and, mm-hmm. They take your temperature when you go into places. And I think it was the same, if not maybe even a little bit more cautious than my experience in the U.S.
Fair enough. So you mentioned that, kind of boring last 10 months, obviously, for a lot of us. How are you staying sane? How you been staying sane during this time? I mean, obviously, the release of the album, we've kind of seen what's probably kept you sane. But aside from, writing the record.
I've done a little bit of traveling.
Yeah.
And I've watched a lot of TV. I watched about 20 seasons of Survivor.
Okay.
And lots of other shows. I moved. I still live in the same area, in the Phoenix area, but I moved. I worked on the record, and the record was kind of a weird thing because I was writing it and recording it and working on the release of it, but it was all a secret. So
yeah.
it was an interesting challenge. It kept me busy, but I also couldn't really talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, my friends and whoever else knew about it, but it wasn't something that I was like, if you're talking about social media, whatever, like I let on that I wasn't working on anything,
I want to get into that, but the first thing that I saw of anything was I'm a subscriber to Decibel Magazine, and you guys took out an ad for, or a Closed Casket took out an ad or something for the full back of the current issue, which has Nervosa on the cover, and I looked at the back, I was like, oh, new Gate Creeper's coming, something's up, man, because it was your logo, and it said coming soon, or it just said an unexpected reality, I can't remember exactly, didn't give too much details, but it was just that little nugget that was like, all right, something's cool. Something's coming up.
Yeah, I mean, we did that on purpose. Justin, who my friend Justin, who runs Closed Casket Activities, is a pretty good friend of mine these days. And we worked you know, really closely together on everything. And we kind of, you know, Decibel was a magazine that we have a good relationship with, and they were one of the few people, or definitely one of the few media outlets that we gave the go ahead to.
Yeah.
You know, like we gave them the heads up, because I mean, they kind of played a whole part in it, because, you know, this record came about after our Decibel tour got canceled. Mm-hmm. And, we have a good relationship with them. So we told them about it.
Yep.
And, we wanted to put an ad, and it was still, we were unsure when it was going to come out, because, you know, we did a surprise release, but we wanted to wait until we had the actual records in our hand before we released it. And you know, that we had some setbacks, some delays with the pressing plant, but we were like, all right, let's do an ad, and not put any information on it. Mm-hmm. You know, like just put, it just has the art, and it, just says Gate Creeper, Unexpected Reality. It doesn't say what it is. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say who's putting it out. Doesn't say, what, you know, when.
Yeah.
And
just something.
We just wanted to put out there like an old school teaser.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And that's totally how I took it too. And it just kind of got me anticipated, and it's better than, I can't knock any band for, you know, doing whatever they're doing, you know. I'm not a musician myself, so I can't really criticize, but some bands will just be like a teaser of a teaser, you know, an announcement of an announcement.
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely a pet peeve of mine. And I think this whole thing, you know, the whole shutdown of everything, you know, shutdown of live music in particular, artists are having some having more difficult time than others to just sit down and, you know, be quiet for a little while. I think even in normal times, you know, bands have a hard time, like, you know, if you don't have anything to post about, you don't have to post anything. Yep. You know, you don't have to post that you're going to be making an announcement next week. You can just wait until you have to make the announcement, you know? So it's been kind of, and it's been an interesting time for everybody. So this record and the way that we launched the record was in response to all of that, and kind of like go against how we would normally do it, and maybe do the things in a way that, you know, I've been tinkering with, or I've wanted to do, and almost in a way that I want to do it differently than I've watched other bands do things, or other records come out, and I want to do that differently.
Yeah.
You know,
I think you guys are in a great spot for that, because you put out Deserted, you know, you got that, you know, big push. You didn't do a ton of touring on it, but you guys are on that level now. You got a lot of followers. You got a lot of eyes and ears on you guys, so then when this happens, you don't have to constantly be feeling like you have to post stuff to stay relevant. Like if you were a band that maybe didn't have as much, you weren't as out there as much, maybe didn't have that, you know, Deserted, or you were waiting to release that or something, maybe you would feel the need to like kind of flood people with more like, hey guys, we're still here.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, we were definitely lucky in that sense.
Yeah.
You know, we only, you know, Deserted came out in, you know, October 2019, and we got to do one tour.
Yep. With Exhumed.
And, yeah, yeah.
That was badass.
And 2020 was going to be our most heavy tour scheduled year ever, you know, because it was still in that album cycle. We were going to do a couple U.S. tours, we were going to do European tours, like South America, all kinds of stuff. So as far as in our position, you're right, like we already, you know, were able to establish ourselves. We had a good couple years before. You know, because some bands, you know, they could be putting out their first record right now, or in 2020, or, you know, just starting to do more touring. So I think everybody got the rug, you know, pulled out from under them, but we were at least established enough. So like you said, we didn't feel that like, oh, people are going to forget about us for a couple months. So, I mean, that's definitely something that I battled with. But I did feel much more comfortable, with our position, because you know, we've been working hard for, you know, several years. And we were able to have our sort of breakthrough or whatever, you know, before this all happened. So I'm grateful for that for sure.
You mentioned that the Decibel Tour. Now, that was something that was going to hit Seattle with Mayhem, Aboth, you guys, and Idle Hands. I think they changed their name. Idle Hands changed their name, too.
Yeah, Unto Others, I believe.
Unto Others. But so you guys were about to. I actually got your tour t-shirt because you got those printed up, not knowing the tour was going to be canceled. So tell me, like, how close to getting on the road were you guys?
Oh, I mean, we were packed up and ready to go. I think that the tour got canceled 2 days before it started.
Jesus.
You know, cause everybody in my band, we're kind of spread out now.
Yeah.
So, we got everybody into town like a couple days up beforehand to practice. We loaded up our trailer. We got all of our merch loaded up and like sorted and put into bins and all that. Like we were ready, packed up to go. And one night when we were practicing, it was probably about 3 days out from the first show, maybe 4 days. We heard rumblings of, you know, hey, I think originally it was like two of the shows. Hey, these shows in California are getting canceled.
Probably Seattle too. Yeah, because Seattle was one of the first.
Yeah, you know, like things weren't that crazy in the U.S. yet. You know, like we heard about it in the news, but it wasn't like in our own backyard yet.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh, that's weird. And then things happened so fast. By the next day, it was just like, hey, the whole tour is probably getting canceled.
Yeah.
And then next morning, it was the morning we were supposed to leave because we were going to give ourselves like 2 days to get to the first show. And we kind of got the calls like, hey, you guys should just stay home.
Yeah.
And I mean, shows definitely were the first kind of thing to get shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember being at home in Phoenix and being like, oh, my tour's canceled. I guess I'm just going to like hang out. And I remember going out, like things weren't shut down as far as like restaurants and all that stuff, I think for probably like another week. In the grand scheme of things, things happened really fast, I think.
Yeah. I remember the last time I went to, we went out to get dim sum and, everyone was like, man, this is sketchy. I don't know. At least we can still eat out. Nope. So you guys didn't, really tease the album much. And you guys didn't like, you know, have a big, traditional rollout of the new album, which by the way, if you're tuning in right now, it's An Unexpected Reality by Gate Creeper out now. Why the surprise drop though? Why just like drop it? What was the reasoning behind that, man?
There's a couple different reasons. One being the music itself, since, you know, from the beginning, the goal was to do something that was a little bit different than we usually do musically.
Totally.
You know, it was supposed to be like two ends of the spectrum, like faster or faster than we usually play, and slow and more drawn out, and I almost wanted it to be like a split, like with our own band.
That's cool. Yeah,
like one side, you know, one side is the fast side, the B side is the slow side, you know. The vinyl for it is the ideal format because it has this fast side and the slow side.
Yeah.
You know, so because it was a little bit different, and you know, a lot of the songs are short and either really short or really long, I didn't want to do the rollout of like, because usually you just put out one song and then a couple weeks later another song. I didn't want to release one song at a time.
Yeah.
So that was a reason for doing the surprise, or for just not doing the traditional rollout. The surprise also, you know, it came into it because I think that we're all just, you know, overwhelmed, and there's just all kinds of things that are being thrown at us over the past year. Just we're constantly on our phones. There's always some crazy something that's happening in the news, mostly bad news, and we're just have all this data and all this content or whatever just thrown at us always, and I feel like we're all just kind of burnt out. So I didn't want to, you know, string people along. I just wanted to be like, boom, here's a new record. you know, and we weren't sure how it was going to do. I mean, you know, you listen to all kinds of different music and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, like more pop or like rap albums. That's how they do it now.
Totally.
You know, it's just, yep. it just comes out. The difference being that they don't usually have like a physical product.
Yeah.
So like say Future or something has a new album drop. It's probably not going to have vinyl.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit easier that way to just record and just release it. So like I mentioned earlier, that it took a little bit longer than we wanted to because yeah. we had all the physical products, but you know, it's almost been out a week now officially, and I think it did well, and as well or maybe even better than our yeah. last record, which we did a long rollout for. So it was an experiment that, you know, went pretty well. We're all pretty happy about it.
That's awesome. And I think those songs are going to go well in a set too. Like if you decide to, when you come back, you know, maybe that long one is going to be a nice ending song for like a headlining set or wherever you choose to do it. But just those fast thrashy ones, kind of, you know, you got a Napalm Death poster behind you, kind of very, yeah. you know, Napalm Death kicking the ass anthems.
Yeah. I mean, that was something that we were thinking about when we were writing it. But, you know, like, we're making a new record, but also it's like, you know, we're adding more songs to our catalog.
Yeah.
And we're, all these fast ones will be good to pepper into our set, you know, because usually it's kind of mid-tempo or slower songs is our normal speed. So it'll be cool to pepper these in, you know, to spice it up in the set, you know.
So, and you can answer this or not answer it, just depending on, you know, if you're allowed to say or not, but, was there a talk about putting this out on Relapse, or did you just want to do it with Closed Casket? Are you guys still a Relapse band, or?
You know, we've done, two records, on Relapse,
yeah.
actually more than that, but, we've done records in between. Like we did a 7-inch with Closed Casket already,
yeah.
In 2017. And, you know, we have a long history with Closed Casket, even maybe further than Relapse, because our first record, Sonora Deprivation, when we recorded it, it was originally supposed to come out on a different label, on A389.
Yeah, shout out Dom.
And yeah. So Dom was going to put it out, but it was right around the time that he was slowing his label down. So we recorded it. And when it was done, we sent it to Dom, and he's like, yeah, this is really good. I'm kind of slowing my label down.
Okay.
And I don't think I won't be able to put in as much as this record deserves, is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I'm going to send it to Relapse and some other or whatever else. And we're like, whoa. You know? It seemed kind of like insane, or it seemed like pretty absurd. Like, oh, okay, well, I guess that just means that we need to find someone else to put it out.
Yeah. Didn't expect much.
Talking to other labels, and Closed Casket was one of them.
Okay.
But then, you know, we got the call from Relapse, and that's how it all worked out. But since then, we've had a good relationship with Closed Casket. We did a Sweltering Madness 7-inch with him in 2017. So pretty much as soon as this idea was concocted for this record,
yeah.
I hit up Justin and asked him if he wanted to do it. So there was never really talk of putting it out on any other label.
Cool.
And I'm glad that we did, because like I said, Justin's a good friend of mine now, and he was down for anything that we wanted to do, whether it was put an ad in the back of Decibel that didn't mm-hmm. have his label logo on yep. it at all, or doing a surprise, or any of the stuff that we wanted to do. There was no pushback at all, and I was able to be very hands-on, so it all worked out.
And shout out to Closed Casket too. I mean, they put out some really awesome records in the past too, that God's Hate, Vain, you know, a lot of metallic hardcore, a lot of
Gulch.
Yep, Gulch. That record was huge too. And that's one thing about Closed Casket activities, and this past year has been insane. You guys, from dropping the album Surprise drop, you guys have sold out of what, like two pressings now almost immediately? That's wild. Congratulations.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. Yeah, thank you. The first press, I think, sold out on the first day. And, you know, we already had the second press ready to go because we kind of thought that would be the case, but we weren't sure. But I think that we still have some of the second press going. So it's almost gone, though, I think.
I'm probably going to get some hate from this, but I bought it on CD because I play CDs in my car. I still like physical copies of things. I like to read the lyrics, but I do have a vinyl collection, but I really, if I really want to listen to it on a daily basis, I want to get the CD. So I just bought the CD. How do you listen to music? Do you prefer vinyl at home? Do you do CD? Do you do digital? You know, are you a Pandora guy?
I'm kind of in a weird spot. If I like a record, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
But say that I own the record, I'll probably listen to it more often digitally.
Yeah.
Even though I own the record, just out of convenience.
For sure.
You know, like on my computer working on something, I'll just throw it on Spotify, or I'm on my phone, you know, I'm like, got my AirPods in or whatever, you know, like it's a matter of convenience. Mm-hmm. But I do like buying the records, not only to like support, but also because it's cool, you know, like to have the art really big.
Oh yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
I mean, CDs are cool too, and they have its own special vibe to it, you know, but
there's a nostalgia for me with CDs. Since I got a CD, I had a cassette player in my car for years, and I just recently got an upgrade. You know, you have to special order stereos now to have a CD player in it.
I believe it.
It was just like an audio receiver for all things digital. But I was like, I need the CD, so I had to special order. Anyway, so there's like a special like nostalgia of me of with CDs now. So I'm kind of in this weird CD phase. It's way behind the times. But anyways, you were saying.
No, I think CDs are cool.
Yeah.
I think CDs are cool. I think that as far as the size of it is cool, like for the vinyl.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, the quality is better or whatever, because it's probably, at least for me, the quality is probably the best listening to it digitally.
Yeah.
But I like having just the physical weight and size of holding the vinyl in my hand, sure. You know?
So, one thing I when I was talking about my car and whatnot, I remembered you leveled up this year. You got a Beamer and you got the most bitchin' license plate. It says Poser. Tell me about the decision to put Poser on your license plate.
Well, I mean, it's kind of it is a joke. But I got that car. I've kind of had a weird year where, you know, I've been playing music for forever, but I've been playing music full time as my job for 4 years now.
Yeah.
And, you know, in those years and Gay Creeper, you know, breaking through or, you know, getting some level of like popularity or whatever it is, you know, that brings a lot of people that are, you know, want to hate on you.
Oh yeah.
And, I'm very aware of it, and I have pretty thick skin as far as, you know, if people are just, you know, Gay Creeper sucks. You know, if people don't like my band, that's fine.
I saw you share a meme page that was basically just dissing on you guys. Like, when I followed you on Instagram, you like put it on your story of like this specific Gate Creeper hating meme page. Like,
yeah.
That's a new level.
I feel like that just comes with the territory.
Yeah.
The more people that you reach, there's going to be a percentage of people who don't like what you do, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Some people get a little personal with it. And long story short, I think I've been called a poser for some reason, which is kind of funny to me. But when I got that car, you know, thanks to, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I had some good years.
Yeah.
I was able to do some good things for myself. So I bought that car, and it's white. And I posted a picture of it on Instagram, and a couple people were like, that's not a metal car. You know, like... and just the fact of having a nice car, I think people, you know, like super underground people are like, oh, wow, you have a nice car. So that means that you're a poser. So I just kind of, you know, ran with it, and I got the custom license plate that said poser. So I think it's funny.
It is funny. That reminds me of when Ian and I first started doing Metal Shop. We sometimes do stage announcements and introduce bands, and we introduced this show at El Corazon, El Corazon. It was a smaller show, so it wasn't like, you know, tons and tons of people, but we got up there to announce, I think it was a death metal show, and this guy goes, "You guys don't look metal, posers." It's like, what am I supposed to say to that? All right, I guess you're right. Play metal on the radio? I mean, like, what?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to break it down into what a poser is, it's someone is pretending to be something that you're not.
Yeah.
So if you don't actually look like the part, isn't that not being a poser? If you're just being yourself? It's just a word that people throw around, and I think it's stupid. I think it's a kind of a lazy diss on somebody. But it's also, I think it's a hilarious license plate.
Absolutely, man. So I just had to bring that up. So one thing that hit me hard, and I don't have the lyrics yet, but just the title of it, and you've answered this before, but I'm sober. I've been sober for about 5 years now. You've been open about your past of sobriety and being sober, was it 8 or 9 years now?
Eight
years. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
There's a song on the new album called Sick of Being Sober. Mm-hmm. And I know you've answered this in a couple interviews, but could you break down the meaning of that for us? Because someone seeing that might be like, oh, no, this is a cry for help. Like,
I mean, as of a lot of things, and it's particularly on this record, it's like I wrote a lot of the lyrics about way more personal things than I usually do.
Yeah.
Because along with the music being different, I wanted the vocals to be, or at least the lyrics to be different. And in typical Gatekeeper songs, I don't really write in the first person. It could be about something that happened in my life or my own feelings, but it's put in a little bit more abstract way or even more vague. And I usually don't write in the first person. So I'm not saying like I or anything like that, but on this record, most if not all the songs are written like that, and it's just about personal stuff in a much more direct way. And so that song came about. The title, purposely titled it that, which is kind of like being a little bit sarcastic. Part of it is a shout out to the Chief Keef song, Hate Being Sober. And it's supposed to be purposefully a little bit like dramatic, but as far as the content of the song and the reasoning behind it is because I remember around the time that I was writing it, I was having a lot of recurring dreams of relapsing, I guess you'd say, which is something that I've always had, but I was like, there was a spout of it happening every night.
Maybe you're just thinking of your record label. No, I'm just kidding. Anyways, keep going.
And I was telling my friend about it, and they're like, oh, that sounds pretty, that's pretty extreme. And I wouldn't say that I was ever fully fantasizing about it, but, the song is kind of about a fantasy of like, what if I just, throw it all away right now. Yeah. And, it's kind of like therapeutic in a way, not just writing about that, but even thinking about it in that way. And they say, in recovery, and you probably heard it, the saying of like, play the tape through. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you're thinking about, oh, I want to drink today, or I want to get high today, and playing the tape through means that, okay, well, if I get high, what's going to happen the week after that? What's going to happen from there? How's it going to end? Mm-hmm. And to give it some sort of perspective. So that song is pretty much me playing the tape through.
I've had those similar dreams. And when I was talking to someone that I talked to about those kind of things, they mentioned, and they kind of laughed, and they said, well, were you high in your dream? I said, yeah. Well, did you get high in real life? No. Well, then that's a freebie, and you didn't relapse.
I mean, a lot of those dreams that I have, most of the time I'm not able to actually do the drugs or whatever. I'm like getting them, or like I'm missing a piece. I'm like trying to it's all like the chase of it.
Oh yeah.
A few times I'm actually doing it, and a few times it's been so real that I wake up and I'm like, oh no, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Did
and
I realize?
Like, oh no. What did I do? And it felt so real that I was like, I woke up with extreme guilt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess that's all part of it. I've stayed sober.
That's awesome. Still. That's not easy to do when you're in like, especially, you know, I mean, that's not easy for anyone when they've dealt with addiction, but it's not also probably not especially easy when you're in a death metal band that's touring, you know, sometimes pretty grimy places where you get drink tickets, you know, or you probably offered some things with some bands or some friends that, you know, might not always be easy to turn down, but that says a lot about your willpower.
Thank you. I'm lucky. You know, pretty much anyone, bands that we tour with or whatever, you know, there's always the first night or two that people are like, hey, come have a beer with us or whatever. And all I have to tell them is once, you know, I don't drink, this is why, or whatever it is. And everybody's cool with it. I've never had an experience where someone's like, are you sure? Why not? You know? And also I'm really lucky that everyone in my band is pretty tame. You know, like I'm the only sober, like in recovery person in my band at this point. But there's not the pressure within the band for me to keep up with anybody. Like anybody in my band that parties, it's at a very responsible level. And I can't imagine touring with a different group of people. It would be a much harder thing, not just for my own sobriety, but just, you know, logistically on tour. You know, everybody keeps it together in a super professional way, so I'm really thankful for that.
Chase, can you imagine if you were who you are now and you had to tour with who you were in the past?
I mean, there's probably a reason why I wasn't able to do it. Even though I've been playing music since I was a young teenager, Gate Creeper is the first band that I've actually been able to do anything with and to tour with, and I didn't start this band till after I was sober.
Yeah.
And there's probably a reason behind that, you know. And I've thought about that. Like I can't imagine, you know, now looking back of years of touring and all the stuff that goes into it, and for me, like the responsibilities and all that, I'm like, I don't know how, because I have friends that do it, you know, partying every night. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I can't imagine. Like I just couldn't do it.
Shout out to Ace in the Forum of Passion podcast. I'm going to do a little callback to that because you had a great episode on that, and you mentioned that you were in the band Slut Sister. I didn't know that, and you also mentioned about Blogspot era of music. I downloaded Slut Sister from a Blogspot, so you know
it was probably from my blog.
What was your blog?
I had a blog called Infected Crypt.
Ooh, I remember Infected. Was it Infected Crypt on Blogspot? I bet I had that as a Christ All Martyr was my favorite.
Oh yes, there was a whole bunch of good ones. Definitely in that era, it was like 2008.
Oh man,
Mediafire downloads.
Half my music catalog on MP3 was probably from that. I just got like everything. That was R.I.P. the Mediafire Blogspot era. It was a good era.
I mean, that's I was always obsessed with music and downloading music ever since like the Napster era or whatever, and it went through different phases or different mediums to pirate music or to find new music. Mm-hmm. Because I think that sort of stuff, like the Blogspot Mediafire era, you know, you could look at it as just mass pirating of music. But there was also like kind of pre social media as we know it now, or, you know, it was almost more about the sharing of music, you know, like
that was the tape trading of our generation.
Yeah. And it's like, so for me, I had my own blog and it was like, hey, this is the stuff that I like, you know, like putting it out there, and you could go onto somebody else's blog and it's kind of curated in a way where your fault, like you said, there was ones that were your favorites, and you could go to this blog and you would look at it every day, and they would post something new, and maybe you hadn't heard it before, but you already liked everything yep. else that they had recommended. So you're like, oh, I'm going to check this out because I trust this person's taste. It was like, it was pirating. Yes. It was stealing music. Yes. But also it was like opening the doors to new music for a lot of people. I think of our generation, it was a great way to find new music for me, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. You were a Blogspot tastemaker. Damn. So I have a couple questions here just about like the grand scheme of things. Obviously, we're seeing the vaccine rollout here in the United States and all over the world. Tours are getting pushed back maybe the fall. Hopefully, that's what Fauci says. Fall, maybe, you know, we'll see. You know, you can't really make too many plans here. But when it is deemed safe to go back to shows, do you feel like it's going to be a slow thing, or do you think it's going to be like boom, everyone's back on, everyone's touring on top of each other, you know, crazy amount of shows all the time? What do you feel it's going to be slow or just like back with a bang?
I think it's going to be a mixture of both. What I think is going to happen is that as soon as we get the go ahead to do shows, yes, everybody's going to try to go on tour and it's going to be slammed. That's you know, for certain going to happen. Yeah. You know, like everybody's, me included, our band included, is like itching to get out there. So I think as soon as it's like, you know, bans have been lifted or whatever it is, people are going to get out there and there's going to be every band touring, and there's going to be in your city, there's going to be a show every night.
Yeah.
Which in turn, I think the slow part is going to be, number one, I think people might be a little bit weirded out at first. You know, like I think, you know, some people, they're like, I don't care what it is. I want to go to a show right now. Yeah. You know, I'd watch, you know, some old man fart into a microphone.
I'd watch a 311 cover band. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, a lot of people, they're going to want to go out to a show.
Yeah.
There's going to be a certain percentage of people, they're like, I don't know.
Sketched out. Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not sure if I want to do that. And then also, contributing to the slow side, I think, is that, you know, people have been, a lot of people's careers or jobs have mm-hmm. been impacted. So people aren't going to have the money to go to five shows a week that yeah. are going to be coming through their city. And so it's going to be a little bit more selective,
yeah.
you know, because it's going to be oversaturated, but then there's not going to be enough, you know, in the economy for people to go to all those shows. So it's going to be hit or miss, but we're just all sitting around waiting for the go ahead, you know.
I think once that first like big, you know, show hits, maybe it's a stacked bill or, you know, a first big tour or something, once everyone's comfortable coming back, I feel like it's just going to be like such a celebration of life, and just like people are going to be like, so like more stage dives than you've ever seen, you know, just like,
yeah.
Dude, it's going to be awesome. I think actually the last stage dive I did was at a Gate Creeper show. It was during Dying Fetus, and I just saw like people going off, and at El Corazon, they're a little bit more yeah. liberal with it. And so I just went off and did a stage dive during Dying Fetus. So good times.
You didn't hit that pole in the middle.
No,
of the
no, I was on the other side.
I always thought that was funny about that, that venue.
So
big pole in the middle of the stage.
Exactly. Speaking of stage dives, I have to bring up, I know it's probably still pretty raw, but a couple years back, we saw you guys tour Power Trip.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Cannibal Corpse and Power Trip, Gate Creeper, amazing show up at Numos.
At Numos, right?
Yep, Numos. Yeah. Incredible, incredible show. This past year, we had the unfortunate news that Riley Gale, singer of Power Trip, awesome dude, passed away. Would you like to share any memories you have with Riley?
Yeah, I mean, I've got plenty of good memories with them. You know, when our first record came out, Snore and Deprivation, it was in October of 2016.
Yeah.
And we had met Riley before. You know, I had met him before that, years before, just from him, you know, playing shows, coming yep. through. And me and him both kind of did the same thing as well at home. Like, we would kind of work part-time for a promotion company.
Yeah.
So I think he was, when we were playing in Dallas, it was the day before our record was coming out. It was when we were on tour with Skeleton Witch, Iron Reagan, and Oathbreaker.
Yeah, I remember that tour.
Kind of like our big first big package tour. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think the tour started a week or two before our record at the time was coming out. So our show was in Dallas, and Riley was like working the show, kind of. I didn't see him doing much work.
Yeah.
But he was kind of like, you know, he was the ambassador for the promoter when we got there.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, you can stay at my house. So we played the show, we hung out, and then we went back to his house and we all hung out. And I remember it being really special because I remember he played us Nightmare Logic for the first time. It wasn't out yet. It wasn't going to come out for a couple more months. But, you know, obviously none of us had heard it yet, but we got done with the show. It was probably late at night. We went back to his house and we were sitting on the couch and he played us this record for the first time. We were all looking forward to new Power Trip music. So that was really cool. And then I remember waking up the next morning and it was like our first, you know, this is our first record on Relapse, our first like full length.
Yeah.
And this like super, I don't know, just like overwhelming feeling of being like, oh, our record is out.
You know,
like waking up and people are texting me about like, oh, I heard the record and all this stuff. And I'll always associate that with Riley because we were literally like waking up at his house at that time. So that was a really good one. And then, you know, later the next year we got to tour with Power Trip.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, a crazy tour like you talk about with Power Trip and Cannibal Corpse. So it was like really cool venues and, you know, every show was awesome and we got to spend a lot of time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, became pretty tight with them and kept in contact always. And if you were there, Power Trip has ever, we played a couple more shows with them since. But you know, if he was ever in Arizona, if we were ever in Texas, we'd always meet up and text back and forth all the time about music or whatever was going on. So it was definitely, hit me pretty hard when we found out the news. And I just finished up, doing this record. So it was like it was a weird time. And you know, it was, impact was felt by a lot of people. You know, as one of those people that made friends with everybody through all different circles of, so it's always cool. It was kind of bittersweet to see everybody, you know, paying their tributes afterwards to someone who you have your own personal experience with, and to see other people's experience, it was really cool.
I remember,
rest in peace.
Yeah, absolutely. RIP Riley. I remember when he was in studio, we were having some fun and just chatting about how, you know, there needs to be, you know, how back in the day they had that like Clash of the Titans tour with like Megadeth and what was it like, Suicidal Tendencies, all these bands that were like defining that generation, right? And we were saying like there needs to be that tour for this generation, and it needs to be like Power Trip, Gate Creeper, Code Orange, Harm's Way, you know, Turnstile or something like that. You know, it's just like these heavy hitters of hardcore metal and all of that stuff. And it was just cool. I mean, I know that he definitely looked at you in the similar light. So,
yeah.
To pivot a little bit, you guys have been labeled as stadium death metal. I don't know if you created that, but back in the 90s, you know, with Napalm Death, like you have a poster in the background, a Napalm Death and Carcass and some bigger death metal bands, due to Eric having a relationship with a major label, they were, you know, got major label, they were on a major label. Do you think that there will ever be a time where there will be a death metal band on a major label? I mean, there's not many major labels anymore. It's like four or five. Do you think there will ever be a time where, you know, you'll see a legit death metal band on a major label?
I don't think so. I mean, there's like certain ceilings for different types of things.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like if your music doesn't have clean singing in it, there's a certain point that you can get to.
For sure.
You know, like, say, like, Cannibal Corpse. Like, they're the top. They are, like, yeah, the top,
yeah,
of the mountain. And you can get as big as Cannibal Corpse as a death metal band, but unless you are doing something outside of the norm, and usually, you know, people, you know, we exist in a small, pretty bubble of underground music and extreme, mm-hmm, music. But to the normal person, if the vocals are not sung vocals, as soon as they hear like death metal vocals or like screaming vocals or whatever it is, they're like, oh, turn it off.
Yep.
You know? So you're definitely not going to get on the radio.
No, if you don't have singing, not active rock. So, yeah.
So there's definitely a much lower ceiling for bands like us. And, but you know, who knows, you know, I don't think it's going to be in a major, like, I don't think there's going to be a bigger metal band than Metallica, or even, I would say, more modern times, like Slipknot, you know?
Yeah.
They were huge, but they weren't even on a major label. I mean, they were on what?
Roadrunner.
Or
which is owned by a major, but not, I don't think, at that time. But it's still a subsidiary, also, you know?
They have singing parts.
Exactly. You
know? I mean, they do have very extreme. I was never a Slipknot fan as a kid, but I've grown my appreciation for them recently. Like, I saw them live just a couple.
Oh, they're fun, like, as hell live. Fun, yeah, as hell live.
And it's like, they have extreme, for being as big as a band that they are, they have really extreme parts, you know,
yeah,
like blast beats and stuff, you know, there's like death metal parts in it. So I think I've definitely respect them, and I've become a fan in recent times just because I look at it like, oh,
they got blast beats on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. Like, respect to that, if nothing else, but the whole package, how they brand their band, and it's just like a whole, they're a monster. It's like, yep, a huge monster. So that's kind of another ceiling, or kind of like I talked about Cannibal Corpse being the top of the mountain. I think for extreme metal that has a little bit of a crossover appeal, like Slipknot is, you know, the poster boys for that. But you know, the stadium death metal thing for us was kind of just, again, me kind of being a smartass.
Yeah, for sure.
Interviews and stuff. And it was kind of our credo for when we were doing the record, because we are influenced by that era of death metal bands that were like, quote unquote, the sellout years, you know, whether it's Heartwork or any of that era that were the death metal bands, and they kind
Napalm
of
Death, Fear, Emptiness, Despair.
Like, yeah, that's a or good like record. Domination.
Yeah.
Or like Obituary, World Demise.
Yeah.
Where they, or even like Entombed, Wolverine Blues, where they were toying a little bit with more like kind of standard or more rock or pop song structures. Yeah. And that's something that's always influenced us. So that was when we did Deserted, we're like, this is stadium death metal, which is kind of a joke. It's tongue in cheek.
It's kind of a playoff, like how people call like Tragedy or From Ashes Rise, like Stadium Crust, exactly, right?
Yeah, that's actually, I think that's actually where I like got it from.
Which is so funny, because I don't know, that's still pretty raw, man. Like Stadium Crust, I get it, because it's like epic sounding and building and stuff, but it's just so funny how people have to kind of like give a, you know, they'll compliment it, but it's like a backhanded compliment, you know? It's like,
yeah.
All right.
Well, that's the thing that like I've kind of embraced, where people do say things like a backhanded compliment, and I feel like if you just own it, you're just like, it's no longer, it is. Same with like the Poser license plate. I'm like, just own it. You know, if people want to say whatever it is, and that's kind of like my way of thinking on a lot of things. So we'll see what our next fake genre that we tag or the next Gatekeeper record is. I've been saying that people, you know, getting ready for people to like on our new record, of saying, oh, they're not a real grind band or whatever.
Oh my god. False grind.
Yeah, false grind.
Death to false, like, grind.
A funny one that I think is I've heard before is Scion grind. Right? Like, do you remember the Scion era?
Dude, Scion Rock Festival was sick.
Yeah. But people got hated on for that. People got hated on for playing that. You know, Magruder Grind got hated on for doing like a
record Scion on Scion
Records EP or something. So if anybody is was hating on it, like, yeah, we just, it's Scion grind.
I like that. I think I remember there was a show, I think it was Skeleton Witch and Black Breath in Seattle, and I remember they were handing out free Scion socks at the end. I was like, that was weird, but hey, I got some free socks. And hey, my friends, you know, Zabulba got to play a Scion show with like some huge and you know, bands. I never got to go to them, but they said it was awesome. So hey man,
I heard nothing but good things about the fest, all the free shows. Like, bands got paid, people got to go to the shows for free. Like, what's the problem?
What was that, by the way? What was that? Was there just some guy who, obviously some rad dude, worked in the marketing and was like, hey, let's take this small, crazy, like small fraction of an amount of like a decibel point of how much you would spend on marketing, and it's like an insane amount of money for us. But he's like, hey, let's just do this small thing. And like, what, people didn't notice or something? Like, how did that happen? I feel like there needs to be like some kind of decibel, like in-depth story about like the history of that and how that happened.
I mean, I would like to know that too. I think I know. I think I have a little bit of insider scoop on it. I think that one of the people that was involved with that is also one of the people that does a lot of the metal stuff for Adult Swim.
Oh, that would make sense.
And I think maybe there's some sort of correlation with some of the people that used to book the Scion Fest and maybe Psycho Las Vegas now. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I think it was just one of those cases of like somebody in the right position was like, hey, let's, because the same could be said with Adult Swim. Like, that's like a huge thing, and they put
sick bands,
Dying Fetus, in like playing in a fishbowl. You know, so I think it just takes the right person in the right position to be like, hey, there's all these people. I don't know if they sold more Scions because of it. Probably not, because
they went out of business.
Yeah. So who knows if it was, in a business standpoint, if it was worth it for them. But like you said, it's such a small amount of money compared to, you know, what these companies have.
That exactly.
I always think it's really cool if they somehow put it into something cool, whether even if it's not metal or whatever, put it into something artistic. I mean, Red Bull had the Red Bull Music Academy that they would do stuff like that too. Usually a little bit more experimental, but
my friend's band got to do a free recording in Brooklyn for Converse Rubber Tracks.
Yeah, there you go.
It's just cool. Shout out
to free money.
And
if you have a big company and you want to give us money to do something cool, we'll do it.
I remember Trash Talk was like, they had like a sponsorship with Nike or Vans or something. Like, it's pretty rad to see. So. All right. So I know you're someone who likes all kinds of music. What is your big four of 90s rap?
I mean, definitely my music, my taste has changed in rap since I was younger, but off the top of my head, I would have to go with, Nas, Illmatic, Souls of Mischief, 93 Till Infinity. Eight Ball MJG coming out hard, and
nice.
If I had to pick a UGK album, because I need to throw some Texas love in there.
Yeah.
I'll say Riding Dirty.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm not sure that came out in the 90s. I'd have to check on that, but Maybe Outkast.
Quemini.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
I don't know.
I mean, there's so many good ones. You shouldn't even have to do a big four, yeah.
Yeah, maybe instead of all that, I'll just put Ready to Die in there just to play it safe.
There you go. For me personally, and it's like such a like random album, but it hit me in such, and I was way too young to be listening to music like this, but Brother Lynch Hung Season of the Sickness. I really shouldn't have been listening to music like that at 9 years old, but I knew every lyric, and I guess that kind of describes why I am the way I am now. But that is a classic for me. And then E40 in a major way.
There we go.
Yeah,
there we go. I just looked it up. Riding Dirty did come out in the '90s. So
there you go.
I didn't want to be inaccurate. So
you didn't want to be a poser.
I fact checked it.
Okay, so last couple questions here for you. what is a trend in underground music you'd like to see end? And what's a trend in underground music you'd like to see come back?
I think a trend in underground music that I would like to see end is one of the things that we went against for our this record and doing a surprise. Like, I think that maybe the business model of labels or how music is released is a little bit outdated.
Okay.
You know, like typically we do the 3 month rollout.
Yeah.
It's so you're announcing your record's coming out 3 months before it comes out.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I've just noticed that especially in the last year, be like, oh man, I've been seeing this record, you know, being posted about for 6 weeks and it's still not out yet. I'm already over it.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm already over it. It's not even out yet. So that was one of the reasons that I wanted to do something differently. So I would say, how albums are released or how music is released, I think that needs an update, you know, I would like to see that change. And, cause I feel like maybe metal or underground metal is like clinging on to kind of old ways or things that have worked out in the past, but I feel like things could like be shaken up a little bit. Things that would come back, I think, and they are on their way with, you know, vinyl has made a resurgence. It's been a while now, but, I like physical media stuff, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, I book shows at home and, or I did, and, you know, I'd still like to make a cool flyer for my own shows.
Yeah.
I like to print flyers out and bring it to a show, but you know, like you go to a show now and hypothetically when shows are happening right now, and you're passing out a flyer, people are like, what are you handing me?
Yeah.
You know, what is this piece of paper? Yeah. Just post about it on Facebook, man. But just physical stuff, you know, like posters. Yeah. I always like getting not only just the music, you know, records, CDs, tapes or whatever, but posters, flyers.
I still have all my old flyers from old hardcore shows.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like that stuff's cool to have.
Yeah.
And I think that cause you're like, you know, we're in the same generation and mm-hmm. You know, remember the times before everything was solely digital.
Yep.
And we have an appreciation for that. But I think that there for the younger generations, there's kind of there's a gap or just a lack of appreciation for having things that you can hold.
Yeah.
You know, because I like to collect old stuff. You know, like I have a bunch of you can see behind me, like posters,
promo posters.
Yeah. Flyers, whatever it is. So I would like to see that make a comeback and an emphasis on, you know, Ifirma or whatever you want to call it, you know.
Nice, dude. All right, so my last question for you, man, what is your favorite Northwest band of all time?
Favorite Northwest band.
So it could be Seattle or Portland area. Yeah.
Elliott Smith.
Oh, nice. Okay. Elliott Smith.
Does that count?
Yeah, absolutely, man. He was Portland, played a lot of Seattle shows. I wasn't expecting that one, but absolutely, man. What a heavy, heavy, like not music heavy, but like heavy, like lyrically, poetically, just what an insane musician. And I think the first time I really got into Elliott Smith was from the Royal Tenenbaums movie.
Yeah, same. Needle in the hay when he's yeah. when he's shaving. Yep.
So yeah, RIP Elliott Smith. So all right, Chase, what's the best way to support Gate Creeper during this time when we can't, you know, go out to a show and see you guys?
Buy our record, buy our merch from you know, we have a Holy Mountain Printing merch store.
Yeah, shout out Holy Mountain.
We work really closely with them, and you know, you can get our merch from some stuff through Closed Casket too, with our record. And we have a European store. If you're listening from Europe, we have a store through Evil Greed that you can get things shipped straight from Europe. So you don't have to pay crazy shipping.
Yeah.
And yeah, just listening, you know, I just want people to hear the music. Yeah. You can, you know, we're not able to play shows and support our band financially that way. But if you can, buy it, and if you can't, you know, just listen to it at the very least, you know, spread the word. If you can't buy it, listen to it and send a link to 10 of your friends.
I like that. That's awesome, man. Maybe start a blog spot and put.
Yeah,
wait,
exactly.
No, I didn't say that. Chase, thank you so much, man, for taking the time. I really appreciate it, and it's always good to talk to you. And I'll talk to you soon, man.
Cool, man. Thank you.
Thank you. This has been Metal Shop's
Backstage Pass. I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.